This is an iHeart podcast.
We look back tonight so we can look forward. We'll talk about that. We have foreign policy stuff. House Freedom Caucus Chair Bob Good is with us. What's going on with the spending bill? My goodness, we have a huge show tonight. Plus Lee Smith, and I'm right. I know what you're saying. It was a big day today. We had this Afghanistan hearing stuff, kind of boring. We have the spending stuff, really important. We'll get to that. So what are we going to talk about tonight to open up the show on I'm Right? Well, I'm actually not talking about any of that. I'm looking back tonight. Not focusing on today, I'm looking back. And it's important that we keep looking back. I want to explain why we're about to talk about COVID and what happened 4 years ago and things like that. It's really, 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 really important that we continue to look back, that we don't ignore it, we don't move on, we don't say, oh, that was bad, I'm glad we're through it. We cannot allow that to happen to ourselves or to this country. Why? Because what happened during coronavirus, specifically the lockdowns, the government response to coronavirus, what happened there can never, ever, 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 ever be allowed to happen again, because what happened there changed this country possibly forever and for the worse. And a lot of people still don't really grasp that. They don't grasp what happened. March, this week, 4 years ago, this infamous press conference took place.
We're announcing new guidelines for every American to follow over the next 15 days. As we combat the virus, each and every one of us has a critical role to play in stopping the spread and transmission of the virus. We did this today. This was done by a lot of very talented people, some of whom are standing with me.
I want you to think about that moment. And I know that's not a fun moment to look at, to remember, but I want you to think about that moment. And I want you to think about everything that came after that moment and things that came as a result of that moment. Look, Donald Trump himself. It was his press conference, right? That was the moment his presidency ended. That was the moment he lost his reelection. See, Donald Trump was taking charge, in charge, if we want to put it that way, of a roaring economy. And sitting presidents with roaring economies, doesn't matter whether they're Democrat or Republican, get elected, reelected, I should say, every single time. Every single time. And that moment right there was the moment the roaring economy got flown into the side of a mountain. That moment right there cost him reelection. What did it cost us? What did it cost America? Well, everything. Our dollar, our freedoms, our relationship with our own government, our relationship with our medical community. And I want to make sure I emphasize this again. Even if COVID turned out to be the Black Plague Part 2, which obviously it wasn't, we know that now. Even if it turned out to be the Black Plague Part 2, still stopping your country from moving on purpose in response to a virus is the most insane, damaging, disgusting idea possibly in the history of the world. The idea that you would just point at your society and say, stop moving, your economy, stop moving, kids, no more school. You point to the parts of your society that make it a society and you order them to stop. That idea is bonkers. And that idea now in the minds of many Americans, probably not you, but in the minds of many, 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 many Americans now, because of COVID, because of the COVID response, that's simply what you do. How many Americans out there believe that today? If there was the Black Plague Part 2, God forbid, and it hit our shores today, how many Americans would respond by, hey, should we lock down again? What time should lockdown start? How many days should we lock down? Obviously, we need to lock down because now COVID built that into the minds of Americans that, well, that's just what you do. No, it's not what you do. And in fact, nations around the world had pandemic plans pre-COVID, and none of them included locking down society. Every nation took its plans and chucked it out the door and ruined your life for a chest cold. Everything changed in the cruelty I saw. I know you saw it too. Everyone experienced it in some way, but the cruelty. You remember this video of a funeral? This one's actually in England, of a son trying to comfort his mother. Do you remember this?
Alan writes, I therefore offer you all a very warm welcome as we unite in love and friendship. Sorry. To...
You have to put the chairs back, I'm afraid. You can't move the chairs to resolve.
People turned into monsters. Normal people turned into monsters. Maybe you saw this. Maybe it was your neighbor. Maybe it was your mom, your son, your daughter. I can't bring myself to throw them away. I still have thousands of emails, heartbreaking emails of stories from people. And the ones that get me the most are, Jesse, my mom won't let us come visit. She's never met her grandson. Jesse, my brother, stopped speaking to me because I wasn't vaccinated. Normal people turned into monsters. And let's be honest, we had many monsters running the show already. And those monsters revealed themselves during COVID. There are a million political videos I've seen and you've seen. That's what we do for a living. Here on I'm Right, we bring you political videos every single night of this politician saying this and this bureaucrat saying that. So there have been a million pieces of video that have angered me, made me laugh, made me feel various kinds of emotion. I will tell you, I'm 42 years old, and I have never, I don't think ever, seen a video that has stayed with me like this next video has, and has infuriated me like this next video has, because of everything this video reveals. You're about to watch Mandy Cohen. Mandy Cohen is currently the head of the CDC. She's the current head of the CDC, I want to point that out. She wasn't the head of the CDC when this video was taken. She was in charge of the North Carolina version of that. But I want you to watch this, and as you watch, I want you to watch this human being. I want you to watch how she views her power, how she mocks you, how she laughs at what she'll allow you to do, what she won't allow you to do, and how she made those decisions. I was on the phone with her, and are you gonna let them? And I'm not gonna let them, and ha ha ha, we're not gonna let them. Monsters run the institutions of this nation. Here's the current head of the Center for Disease Control.
So I would call, probably the person I called most was the Secretary of Health and Human Services in Massachusetts. She worked for a Republican governor just to, but you know, when she was like, are you gonna let them have professional football? And I was really like, nope. And she's like, okay, neither are we. it was like conversations like that, so.
I had so much fun. What are we going to take away from them? I have power. You have power. We'll take that away. Isn't that fun? I'm not going to forget. I'm not going to let it go. Because these people, none of them lost their jobs. None of them, except for Trump. These people all got promoted. That woman went from North Carolina to the big cheese, the feds. They all got promoted. And I'm not going to forget how these people thought they were the good guy while they censored the truth. I'm gonna play you a video real quick. This is just Jen Psaki talking about Facebook, but that specific thing isn't as important as this idea. Remember, the crazy conspiracy theorists were right about everything. The institutions of this nation, our medical, our political, our media, the institutions of this nation were wrong about everything. And the institutions who were wrong about everything, they not only lied about everything, they made sure the truth you knew, the truth you spoke, they made sure it couldn't get out. And to this day, they are so unafraid, they brag about it.
In terms of actions, Alex, that we have taken, or we're working to take, I should say, from the federal government, we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. We're flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation.
They brag about it. all that disinformation they were flagging, it was all the correct information. The get your 14th booster shot, that was a lie. That got promoted. The truth got censored. I'm not going to let it go, and neither should you. You should never forget what happened in this nation 4 years ago this week. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Joining me next is going to be chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Bob Good. There's this big spending debate going on right now in the House, and surprise, surprise, it sounds like it didn't go our way. We'll talk to Bob Good about that in a moment. Before we do that, let's talk about something fun. Look, I know when we talk about Byrna pistol launchers, the non-lethal pistol, I know we talk about self-defense, and obviously that's what it's about, right? It's a non-lethal option. I carry concealed, but I like having a non-lethal option. Whether you carry concealed or not, you need a non-lethal option. Shoots these pepper balls, but do you have any idea how much fun it is to practice with these things? When you buy one, they give you this big target comes with it, and it traps the little practice balls, because you get practice balls with it, and they're full of baby powder. My sons, me, the wife, we go in the backyard and just pop, 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 pop. It is so much fun. And it'll save your life and stop a bad man. Legal in all 50 states. They'll mail one to your front door. Get a Byrna pistol launcher. 10% off at Byrna.com/Jesse. That's B-Y-R-N-A. Byrna.com/Jesse. We talk to Bob Good next. Well, look, I know there's a lot of bad news to be found out there with the border and everything else and the debt, but I do have some good news. The good news is the House of Representatives has a GOP majority, so at least we are going to put a stop to a lot of this insane nonsense. Joining me now to update all of us on how exactly that's going, the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, one of the few good ones up there, Congressman Bob Good joins us. Okay, Congressman. Grateful the GOP is in charge, that we're finally going to get some of this radical, crazy stuff under control. Can you give us an update on how all that's going?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have a lot good to report as it applies to funding our government. As you know, we split the omnibus into two mini buses. So I guess we can technically say we didn't do an omnibus because we split the 12 spending bills into two pieces. But unfortunately, we're increasing spending ever so modestly, about $70 billion over the Biden, Pelosi, Schumer levels that were in place when the American people trusted us with the majority 14 months ago. And sadly, we're continuing the policies that are destroying the country. And so I'm planning to vote against this minibus that we expect to get texts, I think, tonight, and to vote on by the end of the week. Unfortunately, again, it's not doing enough to reflect that we do have half of the legislative branch. And because, again, it's going to increase spending, it's going to keep the policies in place that we campaign against, that we run against, that we attack, and that we criticize.
Congressman, can you explain to people who don't understand why split it? Why even bother splitting it if there aren't going to be any cuts? What did we gain from splitting it?
Well, I guess theoretically, at least, it makes it a little easier to review half a spending bill in a short period of time than it does a single spending bill. But materially, there's really no difference. I mean, I guess technically you can say, oh, we didn't do an omnibus like the Democrats did in December of 22. If you remember sort of the last gasp of full control of Democrat government, in December 22, they passed the $1.6 trillion, 3,000-page omnibus. It was kind of the last will of Richard Shelby from Alabama going out the door, and it had, you know, just thousands of earmarks. It was passed by, I think, about 17 Senate Republicans joined it and passing it out the door. I don't think any House Republican voted for it. But really, those spending levels and those policies are still in place 14 months later. So while we have slowed things down, Jesse, we've not exacerbated the situation as badly as would have happened if Democrats were in full control. The minibus that was passed the first half, that was passed 2 weeks ago, 99% of Democrats voted against it. They voted for it. 99% of Democrats voted for it. So it was 207-2 for Democrats. Can you even imagine if Democrats had full control of government, or full control of the House, I should say, would Nancy Pelosi ever bring a spending bill to the floor that Republicans would pass 99% and Democrats would only vote for it 2-1 like Republicans did?
Bob, could you explain, do Republicans on the Hill Do they care about spending? I get the impression, this is just the impression I get, that they don't, because the American people don't. Even the Republican voter really, truly doesn't. I realize some people in your district do, and people watching this show obviously do, but Republicans as a whole, they don't care about spending, so Republicans go to Washington and they don't want to cut anything.
Well, actions would confirm what you're saying there. We could speculate on what they really care about, but the actions would betray the campaign rhetoric or the talking points that we care about it. But I think the American people, Jesse, are realizing that the harm from the spending in increasing numbers, because they're suffering under 40-year high inflation and 20-year high interest rates. The average mortgage is some 60% more expensive than it was when this president came into office. They're paying about $1,000 a month more for the essentials, meaning groceries, housing, utilities, and gasoline than they were when this president got into office. So the American people are suffering. And I don't think spending and the debt and the deficit are just an abstract concept anymore, because the days of spending without consequence are over. Our credit's been downgraded twice in the last year. Again, interest rates are higher as a result. So it's really hurting the American people. And I think they understand that something has to change.
Yeah, I wish they did too. All right, moving on. Mayorkas. Is he actually going to get impeached? I know we had the inquiry, and it looks like he's going to get the heave-ho. Maybe, I don't know, now that we had that loser Ken Buck leave, I don't know. Where do we sit on all this?
Well, it did pass the House by one vote, and so it's been sent on to the Senate, so it's up to the Senate to take it up. The Senate does have to take it up. I don't know exactly what their timeline will be when they do take it up. But he certainly should be impeached. Frankly, the president should be impeached because of the border. We don't need any more evidence or investigation other than 10 million illegals who've invaded the country with the help, not being allowed in by this president, but being helped into this country by this president and his policies, Mayorkas being the primary person executing those policies. And Jesse, never in the history of the country, never before, has our own president and by extension his administration done more to intentionally harm the United States than what this president has done with the border. You know, you probably just saw it in the last day or two. You had this Lebanese illegal alien who had ties to Hezbollah. He worked for Hezbollah for some 7 years, got caught. He got caught, thankfully, to go to New York and to make a bomb. And that's why he was coming into the country. How many do you think like that we might have in the 2 million the 2 million gotaways that we know about?
Yeah, Lee. Congressman, thank you so much for being one of the ones trying to fight for us up there. I appreciate it. Guy from Hezbollah comes across the border. He's making a bomb, and that's one of the ones they caught. We don't think enough about it. I guess, what good would it do to sit and dwell on it? How many bad guys are here making preparations as we speak, as you're sitting there watching me on the TV? Something. All right. Afghanistan. There's a little Afghanistan hearing in Congress today. Let's talk to Jason Beardsley, Green Beret, about that, about accountability and the lack thereof. Before we get to Jason, let's talk about the lack of accountability for timeshare companies. Listen, these timeshare companies are the biggest bunch of scammers. And I hate that about them, because you get the flowery brochure, you get the presentation, hey, don't you want your timeshare on the beach? And you get in, but what they never end up mentioning during that seminar, what they never mention when you're signing that paperwork, is you're never allowed out. They don't let you out. When you're done with it, you can't just hand it back. They said, no, sorry, it's yours permanently. Enjoy that thing. It's not yours permanently, because Lone Star Transfer exists. It would be if it wasn't for Lone Star, but Lone Star Transfer will permanently get you out and legally get you out. They are confident. Probably cocky would be more accurate. 99% of the time, they're successful. You make that phone call, Lone Star Transfer will set you free. They're so confident, they put it in writing. Call them. 844-310-2646. Or go to LoneStarTransfer.com. We'll be back.
I'd like to talk a little bit now about Abbey Gate. It was a tragic event, one of many that have occurred over our 20-year engagement in Afghanistan. It remains my opinion that if there is culpability in this attack, it lies in policy decisions that created the environment of August 2021 in Kabul.
Afghanistan is another one of those things we're not going to let go. There are things that I don't intend to let go because of how many lives were changed, lost, altered because of the lies and corruption and idiocy of this government. I'm sorry, but I'm not just going to forget it and let it go. Joining me now, Green Beret, Senior Advisor at Concerned Veterans for America, my friend Jason Beardsley joins us. Okay, Jason, it's obvious by this point in time, at least to me, I'm sure to you, that nobody is going to ever be held accountable for that 20-year debacle in Afghanistan. No politicians, no generals, no admirals. And I just, I have such a difficult time wrapping my mind around the fact that that's the kind of country I live in now.
Yeah, that hurts very deeply, especially for the patriotic service members who love this country and wanted nothing but to serve it at their highest, you know, calling. And some lost their lives or lost limbs for that. And to come back and watch the lack of accountability, whether it's, you could go all the way back. So this doesn't start like in the last 10 years. Vietnam, we didn't have as much accountability. Then you roll forward to things like the Afghanistan withdrawal or Benghazi or Iraq or what just happened with our three service members in Jordan. What we never get is we never get resolution. I was watching the hearing before we dialed in today, and you're just watching two sides of the political spectrum point out what the other side is doing wrong, but there is nothing that the American people can put their hands to and say, this is what went wrong, and this is what we're going to do about it. Nobody got fired, and nobody lost their job, but our service members lose their lives. That's what American people are so tired of when they watch these foreign policy entanglements stretch for years, and then we never get the insight, we never get the oversight, we never get accountability. So that's what we're demanding. It's hard to get from these guys.
It is. Jason, can you explain to me what changed or why it changed? Because you brought up Vietnam, and that's a good point. And it's wild to me. I'm a World War II freak, like every guy who hits the age of 40. I read everything I can get my hands on when it comes to World War II. And it really is, honestly, it's borderline. And I'm a big accountability, fire them all guy. It's honestly over the top in World War II how quickly you would get the axe if you were a flag officer of any kind and an operation didn't go your way, even ones that weren't even your fault. Oh, you're gone, fired. Oh, you're gone. Oh, goodbye. Hello to a court-martial. Your career is ruined. It was automatically done. It was, again, it was too much. And now none of these guys get fired ever. What changed?
You know, you bring up an excellent point with World War II. We can go all the way back to the Civil War. I think most of us that recognize President Lincoln had to fire general after general just to get to some victory. And here comes a real, let's call it a cynical point, but one that history will sort of recommend. The less we fire generals, the less we win wars, right? So in the last 20 years, when we pull out of a place like Iraq and Afghanistan, there have not been accountability. You see a different dynamic on the battlefield, which is not looking for a concluded victory, but rather some sort of ambiguous, unclear goal, which of course is not a military thing. This is why they're struggling. Our recruitment is down. The morale has been hit. I represent Concerned Veterans for America. And these are veterans who wanted to come back and say, do not let this happen to the next generation of veterans. That's on healthcare, but it's also on foreign policy. We cannot afford as American taxpayers to spend our money like drunken sailors. Pardon the pun.
What were the biggest failures in Afghanistan the way you see it? Everyone remembers the withdrawal, right? Because it was just awful. Every part of it was awful. Our 13 warriors, then we drone strike 10 innocent people. Everyone remembers that. But Afghanistan was a 20-year pile of crap long before that withdrawal, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest failures is the big business idea of war, right? Where when we did the invasion early on with special operations, CIA, hand in hand with Taliban, and we actually got good control of the population. And you just heard General Milley testifying moments ago, right before we dialed up again, that we had intelligence back in the early part of this invasion that could have gotten us to bin Laden had we tried harder. But instead, we leaned back a little, we brought in big conventional forces, and the rest of this became a corporate, you know, monopolized sort of story about 20 years of profligate spending with zero accountability. So I think when you introduce this idea of, you know, what Eisenhower talked about, this industrial complex and how the big companies are making money, you're going to lose sight of what the actual victory component is. And I served in Iraq, I served in other combat zones as well. And what I was always missing as a soldier, again, a veteran from America, is what are we doing and how do we win this? But nobody ever had that answer. So in the end, I think what changed, Jesse, is that we stopped asking our military to win wars, and we started asking them to do things that are vague and ambiguous and belong rather than the military over in the domain of the State Department. You want to build a nation? Go to the State Department. They're not good at it. I'm not suggesting they are, but it's definitely not the role of the military.
Jason, one of the things that's hit me is I don't have a single GWAT veteran, Global War on Terrorism. I don't have a single Global War on Terrorism friend who is encouraging his children to join the military. And I can't find another time in our history where that is the case. Even the Vietnam vets were okay, for the most part, from what I read, from what I talk to, with their boys signing up and going to fight. The GWAT vets are out on all that. What happened?
We got whipped, you know, after Vietnam. You mentioned there was a huge morale decrease. And so the late 70s were filled with a lot of people that were sort of not the best of the best. But that got turned around, and pretty soon people became proud again to be part of the military. Pride comes with things like accomplishment or, you know, discipline and accountability. If the soldiers, the frontline soldiers who lost friends, I'm one of them, buried them in places like Arlington over and over again, from war wounds, came back home and saw that there was no closure, that's defeating, that's debilitating. On the other hand, if they see in the long term, places like Veterans Affairs, where Concerned Veterans for America, we talk about this all the time, you can't even get good health care from Veterans Affairs. And I should comment, plenty of people do, but it's randomized. Some of us have to wait in lines, and there's bureaucracy, and there's all kinds of scandals. So when we're treated like that, and we're losing wars, we look down at our children, who we know are going to go for the next, series or generation of wars. And so far, the track record's no good. We're losing. We haven't been able to maintain the prowess or the acumen that the military is so proud of. And so when we come back from Afghanistan, we come back from Iraq, and we know that the politicians are in charge and handing us ambiguity and vagary, we have a hard time wanting to tell our children, yeah, this is the right thing to serve for. You got to win. You got to get back to winning. And that starts with where we started, which is you got to fire generals, and you got to fire them a lot.
Jason, let's shift gears and talk about Haiti here, because this situation appears to be degenerating. I don't even know if it's appropriate to call Haiti's situation degenerating, because Haiti has always sucked. It's been awful, whether they have a government or don't. It's a nightmarish hellhole of a place, and apparently it's only getting worse. I'm concerned.
Well, first of all, you're not supposed to say that. You're never supposed to politically say that the place sucks. We learned that. But what's been going on? You pointed out it's been a long time. They've started in the bloodbath of revolution. There was a recent assassination. There's been political instability. And all the aid from the United Nations or the United States has not settled the political problem. And for people that, look at their map, you'll notice it's right. It's the same island as the Dominican Republic, which actually does pretty well, has a good, fruitful, sort of bountiful economy, and people enjoy going on vacation there. So it's not geography. This is about people. It's about institutions. But what it does is it causes the American taxpayer, once again, when they see these things happen, veterans who have served or families who are shelling out their taxes trying to make ends meet, asking the question after time, why are we spending so much money on foreign aid for a place that apparently can't resolve it, can't do anything with it, right? And then we go in and we look at a place like Ukraine, or we look at Israel. We see all this money leaving. We see our borders overwhelmed. We see that people here in America are hurting and our economy is hurting. So I think that's the problem, is instability in Haiti, long time, political violence, gangs. They have not got the infrastructure necessary to have a governing state that is peaceful. We deal with the ramifications of that, and now we're looking at surge immigration crisis once again. So, again, the American taxpayer deserves some answers, but you're not going to get it from this body of lawmakers. They dodge responsibility.
Jason, You wrote a piece for the American Conservative talking about Ukrainian money and the oversight there, and it's really, really not good. Where is all this money? And forget about the money, the stuff. Is all this stuff getting to the front lines? Are all those 155s getting up there with the troops?
We hope so. That's the essence of this report. It's this long 158-page report on Operation Atlantic Resolve, and it's talking about what's called enhanced end-use material. These are items like Stinger missiles or Javelin missiles that are weapon systems that we want to track. The problem is it's a war zone, so a logistics beam counter can't take that missile, that shoulder-fired missile, walk it to the front edge of the battlefield where the Russians and Ukrainians are shooting at each other and have accountability of it. So somewhere along the way, the oversight body, state and Department of Defense and USAID, allowed for the Ukrainians to do self-reporting on these items. So they actually congratulate themselves in this report for having 90% accountability. But what that really means is 90% of the equipment we're taking on word of faith by these Ukrainian generals, colonels, military commanders, that they've got accountability to this. So bottom line is a lot of our money is missing. The logistics report suggests there's gaps in the inventory. We haven't been able to manage an up-to-date inventory. So again, the big picture here is when Americans are sending highly sophisticated weapon systems into this dark hole, this sort of black hole in the middle of a war, a lot of those systems are going to find their way onto the black markets around the world. They're going to find their way into the hands of enemies, and they're going to be used against U.S. forces or allies around the world. That's happened before. We saw that in the 1980s with the Mujahideen, when we armed the Afghanistan Mujahideen against the Soviets, and then spent another 20 and 30 years throughout the CIA covert programs buying back the Stinger missiles. So we find ourselves once again at a position of disadvantage because of corruption in Ukraine, and the inability for the big business of war to really account for where do all these pieces go. And that's the pieces. There's money too. I've got a friend out of the embassy who told me, yep, you could get a Stinger missile for a couple bottles of whiskey out there. So not a good situation.
Jeez. You know, speaking of Afghanistan, I'm not even going to tell anybody, Jason, I know you know what we paid for each one of those Stinger missiles we bought back from the Afghanis. Gosh, the foreign policy in this country. Jason, thank you, my brother, as always, man. I appreciate it. All right. We have Lee Smith talk a little bit more foreign policy stuff in a moment. Now, before we get to him, obviously, the House spending deal. It's bad. They're not going to stop. Thomas Massie, congressman out of Kentucky, had a social media post up today. I'll paraphrase. He essentially said, hey, I've come to the realization that we're not going to stop spending until there's a crisis, and the crisis is coming. They're all telling you, the finance giants, the political, it's math. The crisis is coming. Have you done anything to prepare? Look, all we can do is prepare. We can't stop it, clearly. Call Oxford Gold Group and prepare. You don't have to go crazy. You don't need a nuclear bunker. You better get some gold or silver coins in your hand. And you better get some gold or silver in your retirement account before this crisis gets here. Once the crisis gets here, don't call me, because you can't do anything by then. Now, 833-995-GOLD. Let Oxford Gold Group walk you through it all. They'll talk you through it all. They make it easy. They handle everything for you. That's why I like it. I just have to call and they'll just handle my stuff. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel.
I'm not going to elaborate on the speech. He made a good speech, and I think he expressed a serious concern shared not only by him, but by many Americans.
What is wrong with advocating for elections in a democracy?
I don't think people have really taken in how big of a deal it is. The Democrats are calling for Netanyahu's head. I don't care whether you are a Democrat. I don't care whether you like Netanyahu. Israel is an ally of the United States of America. It's not some country we colonized. American politicians getting up and calling for the ouster of a leader of an ally, I don't know that it's something I've ever seen before. I bet Lee will remember. He's a lot smarter than me. Joining me now, Lee Smith, columnist at Tablet Magazine. Lee, honestly, you know I'm dumb. Have you ever seen that before? The American politicians, Republicans or Democrats, looking at an ally and saying, hey, get rid of that guy.
Well, I mean, actually, they've been trying to topple Netanyahu. The Biden administration has been trying to topple Netanyahu from the beginning, or from when Netanyahu returned as prime minister. So, no, they don't like him at all. But what's shocking here, I agree, Jesse, it's shocking. But what sticks out for me is Israel is in the middle of a very big war in response to the October 7th massacre. So that's what's surprising, and that's what's appalling to lots of people, and that's what makes the Schumer speech bizarre and horrifying, especially from a man who has at least said, if he's not proven, but at least said that he's determined to advance Israeli security, to advance the U.S.-Israel relationship. It's very surprising to hear him call to topple right now the government of Israel.
Lee, for me, maybe I'm just too cynical, but for me, this honestly, it looks very simple to me. It's not that Democrats care about Israel. It's not that they care about Hamas. They don't really care about any of this stuff. They realize this entire thing has created domestic problems for them with their Jewish voting base, with their Muslim voting base. And they really just want this whole thing to go away. They just want the whole thing to stop. That's what it looks like to me. But tell me, am I all wet on that?
Well, you know, we keep seeing in the press, Jesse, we keep seeing in the press about, oh, yeah, Biden campaign is very, very worried about Michigan and worried about Minnesota because of a very large Arab American and Muslim population. And, you know, Muslim Americans, American Muslims are very upset about what's happening in Gaza. Yeah, no, that's not what's happening, right? And it's not the progressive base. It's not just the kids who are marching around college campus demanding Jewish genocide or going from the river to the sea. This is the Democrats, right? It's not just progressives. This is who the Democrats are. And it goes back to the man who's the real leader of the party, Barack Obama, right? Barack Obama doesn't like Israel. Barack Obama gave the Iranians or legalized Iran's nuclear weapons program. So look, when they're saying Michigan, right, we're always suspicious of the mainstream press, as we should be. So when the mainstream press is saying, yeah, well, the real problem is Michigan here, and it's an electoral issue. It's about crunching numbers here heading into November. That's not it. The Democratic Party leadership right now despises Israel. Again, and we can say that's one of the things that's surprising about Schumer, that Schumer appears to have jumped from the pro-Israel side of American politics to the anti-Israel side. But of course, that side is becoming increasingly small in the Democratic Party. And Schumer's jump perhaps indicates that there's a very little, there's almost no room left on that raft aside for John Fetterman. John Fetterman is the Democratic legislator who is most supportive of Israel right now. The rest of the Democrats, they're not there. And it's not just about Bibi. It's about Israel, again, in the middle of a war.
Okay, then what's the axe to grind between, because you're obviously right, Obama and his lackeys and all the dirty commies that go along with him, and Israel? What's the rift there?
Well, I mean, there's a number of different ways to put this. I think, frankly, we have to say Obama just doesn't like Israel. There's lots of people, even there's people on our side, on the right, who just don't like Israel for a number of different reasons. And it's not really about the aid money, because there's a very good argument to be made from the right about why Israel shouldn't get U.S. aid. Why it's better for Israel and why it's better for the United States. But that's fundamentally where Barack Obama is and has been for a very long time. He doesn't like Israel. There is a strategic argument to be made too, or a strategic framework in which to understand this, in which the Obama administration, which the Democratic Party, still led by Barack Obama, believes that we should partner with the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Middle East. And to do that, to upgrade relations with Iran, we have to downgrade relations, not just with Israel, but with other traditional American allies in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia. So the point is to elevate Iran and downgrade everyone else. And of course, Hamas, is one of Iran's proxy forces, along with the other proxy forces in Syria and Iraq, the Houthis as well, and of course Lebanon, Hezbollah and Lebanon as Iran's long arm on the Eastern Mediterranean. So the Biden team, in line with Obama's vision, is very keen to make things okay with Iran and its proxies around the region. So again, that's the strategic overlay for that vision. But I think, again, it's very important to understand what's really at the core of this. And this is that, you know, Barack Obama does not like Israel. And it doesn't matter whether it's Benjamin Netanyahu who's leading that government or someone else.
Why the pier? A lot of Americans are confused. Why are we sending 1,000 troops over there and we're building a pier in Gaza? And they're calling it a temporary pier. Lee, you and I both know there's nothing temporary the U.S. government's ever going to build. It's going to turn into something more. Why the pier?
Yeah, right. Right. Well, I mean, I think the way to see the pier is in context of U.S. forces. You know, Jesse, I've seen you on social media on this. But U.S. forces in Syria and Iraq, and basically what U.S. forces are doing and have been doing for a long time, unfortunately, even under the Trump administration, is protecting Iranian interests in Baghdad, in Syria. And this is another manifestation of that. Joe Biden is sending American forces to advance the cause of Iranian proxies. And this is the point. This is the naked point of the pier. What we have to understand is sending American forces into harm's way, not just to advance American interests, but to be not just to advance Iranian interests and the interests of their proxies, but also making them vulnerable to Iranian proxies. And this is what we've been seeing happen in Iraq and Syria since Joe Biden became president. We've seen hundreds of attacks on American troops in Syria and Iraq. And we all see a lot of people talking about it. And unfortunately, I think it's probably true. The forces that we're sending, the forces that the Biden administration is sending to Gaza, will also be vulnerable to attacks from Iranian proxies, in particular Hamas, as well as Palestinian Islamic Jihad.
Yeah. Lee, when's this whole thing going to end? When's this whole thing going to wrap up? How's it going to end? Israel's winning, right? I mean, you can't tell from the news.
Well, no, you're right. Israel is winning. It's an extremely hard battle to fight. Look, I think, Jesse, let's separate out here the interests of the Biden administration and the interests of ordinary Americans and the interest of American peace and prosperity. Americans have an interest in an Iranian proxy getting throttled in Gaza. This is good for ordinary Americans. It's good for American interest. It's good for American peace and prosperity. You heard Donald Trump saying the other day, when he was asked about it, he'd say he would tell Netanyahu to get it done and get it done quickly. That's what should happen. But we see the Biden administration has done everything possible to slow down the Israelis time and again. So it's in the American interest for the Israelis to get this done and as quickly as possible. And I should say, American allies around the region, especially in the Gulf, the Saudis, the Emiratis, none of these people like Hamas, none of these people like the Iranians. Of course, they're upset because of what's happening to, insofar as there are many ordinary Palestinian citizens, they're upset about that. But the idea that Hamas is being destroyed, every genuine American partner around the region is hoping for the destruction of Hamas.
Lee, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. All right. We have Late in the Mood next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And did you ever see that show, Wife Swap? Don't worry, it was a PG show. I never actually watched it, but the wife did. My wife did. And it would be on occasionally in the background. I'm walking around the house. And I mean, it was one of those weird shows that would make me stop and just marvel. And I do remember this little tidbit. This poor kid, all he wanted was his bacon.
I need you guys to help me in the kitchen to fill these.
We can do it.
I don't like this crap.
Definitely no cheese in the can. Very happy to be throwing this away.
It's bacon.
No, want my bacon. I gotta tell you something. Bacon is good for me. This is very
good. You're gonna be going to the grocery store.
She thinks at the Blue she's a smart little girl that she can do whatever she wants. No, that's not how she can do it in our family. She's act like she's the queen and we're the sorry people. Joy, I have been nice to you, but now I'm coming to the edge.
I promise you one thing, okay? If you do not have at least one food that you like, I will buy you a piece of junk. Is that a deal?
No, I keep losing at deals, and I don't want to make a deal anymore. I am leaving, and you can't stop me. I'm packing my bags. She's going to try to stop me, but she can't run those little high heels. Never see this face again.
I love that kid. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.